Welcome back to the Swamp, my friends, and welcome if you're new. Today we're going to be sharing some absolutely spine-chilling horror stories from The Night Shift. As always, if you have a story that you would like to share in a future episode, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. Whether it's something with a skimwalker, some sort of dog man, some creepy person, or something from the supernatural that you can't explain, I'd love to see your story and potentially share it with everyone here in the Swamp. Now, without further ado, don't forget to slap that like button, subscribe if you're new, and get ready for these creepy and downright strange Night Shift horror stories. Spark something uncommon this holiday season with incredible, hand-picked gifts from Uncommon Goods. They make your holiday shopping stress-free by scouring the globe for original, handmade, and absolutely remarkable things for everyone on your list. These gifts will spark joy, wonder, delight, and that it's exactly what I wanted feeling. Whether you're shopping for your Secret Santa or your entire family, Uncommon Goods knows exactly what you want. Here's a few cool things I found on their website. I myself have been looking for unique cool things for my bar setup, and I was able to get some really cool recycled record bottle openers that match the vibe perfectly for myself, and I even got a set for my dad. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small, independent businesses alike. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade in the US. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts you can personalize. From holiday host to hostess gifts to the coolest finds for the kids, this hits everybody on your list. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a non-profit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date. So, what are you waiting for? Join me and many others in the Swamp today. Get 15% off your next gift. Go to uncommongoods.com/swamped. That's uncommongoods.com/swamped for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. I recently got a job at a hotel downtown from where I live. I've never worked in the hotel industry before, so I had no idea what to expect. The time between applying for the job and being hired was less than 24 hours, which made me nervous, but I had been looking for several months and couldn't find anything, so I thought I'd take a chance. This hotel is about 150 years old and has plenty of character. Behind the front desk, there are places where the wallpaper was torn away, revealing the psychedelic wallpaper from what I can only guess was the 1970s. We're talking bright pink, neon green, hookah-induced vision type of wallpaper. The walls in the upper floors are painted bright orange and yellow, and the hallways are narrow enough to give off a shining kind of feel to it, but I'll elaborate on that later. My manager is a young Chinese man in his mid-20s. Only 5 years older than me. The man who owns the building is also Chinese, and literally a walking stereotype. The owner is friendly and kind to the employees, but he's also rich enough that he doesn't really care if the hotel is up to par. I learned recently that he also owns one of the more run-down shopping centers downtown, so this might explain the less than 5-star quality of the hotel. Probably about a 3.5-star, in my opinion. Some people describe the place as a quaint, unique, full-of-character place, while others describe it as outdated or disappointing. As a history enthusiast, I would agree that the place is full of character, but I also think the owner should be a little more concerned about keeping the place clean. There are lots of problems in this hotel, including mice, broken toilets, falling ceiling tiles, leaks, and other maintenance nightmares. The fancier rooms on the upper floors have real fireplaces in them, so that adds the risk of fires at the hand of careless guests. Mice are a common problem, and I'm thankful the guests don't have to see all the dusty traps filled with dead rodents in the basement. But by far, the most interesting aspect of the hotel is that it's supposed to be haunted. There are two ghosts that have been reported in the building, as well as the adjoining pub next door. Back when the hotel was first built, it had the reputation of being a complete dive. A lady now named Lady Churchill died in the hotel,
and her spirit supposedly lingers in the haunted room 49. Guests will occasionally smell her perfume, or see her face in the mirror. One of the most frightening stories included someone opening the door only to have the Lady Churchill fly at them in fury. On my first day, when my boss toured me around the hotel, he pointed out the haunted room to me. Lady Churchill was also spotted at the fireplace in the pub arguing with her boyfriend, the other resident ghost, Brady. Brady was stabbed to death on a basement stairwell. The stairwell is not in use anymore, as it leads from the street directly into the basement. Instead, it's used to store extra chairs and miscellaneous items. The light is never turned on, which adds more of a creep factor. My shift is the night shift, from 7 p.m. to 3 a.m. Every evening when I come in, I have to check the entire hotel by myself in search of homeless people sleeping in the back stairwell or trying to get in through the basement. I'm not an intimidating person. I'm a short female, not physically fit, and too friendly for my own good. If I did find somebody hiding in the hotel, what was I supposed to do about it? I'm not sure which creeps me out more, the fact that I'm going around looking for people who shouldn't be there, or the idea that I have to walk through dark and silent areas known to be haunted all by myself. My sweep of the hotel includes all four floors of guest rooms, the kitchen, the back stairwell, the basement stairwell, and the basement. To give you some context, the back stairwell serves as a fire escape connecting all the floors together. It goes straight down, level to level. It always is cold and echoey in there, and as I said before, full of dead mice. When I was first told about the haunted stairway, I mistakenly thought they meant the fire escape stairs, as they go down to the basement level. The four floors, for guest rooms and all their overlook hotel glory, are shaped like a square horseshoe, which means nothing more than enough blind covers that there are creepy twins might suddenly appear. Lady Churchill's haunted room is at the end of the hall, around one of those blind corners, and yes, I do think about that every time I search the hotel. There is an elevator and interior stairway, the one guests are supposed to use. Behind the elevator is the old connecting hallway that basically serves no purpose anymore. In the past, it may have been more useful, but now it just serves as a secret passageway that goes behind the elevator and comes out at the other end of the horseshoe. The hallway especially needs to be searched for homeless people, drunks, and people having sex. The basement is by far the creepiest part of the hotel. To get there, you can either take the elevator or go to the pub that is downstairs. I prefer to go through the pub because there are some fascinating black and white photos from the hotel when it was first built, and I love to look at them. It's also the best place to see the age of the brick foundation. Anyway, the basement is used for storing beer kegs, firewood, planter pots, housekeeping items, and maintenance tools, among other things. It's usually deserted. Now that I know the dark, unused basement stairway is where Brady's spirit is supposed to be, I think I'll try to spend even less time down there. This week is my second week of work, and my boss has put me on the afternoon-evening shift, just so I can get a sense of what it's like in case I ever have to cover anybody in the future. Yesterday was my first late shift, and in the time I learned a whole bunch of things I didn't want to know from the lady I worked with. This woman, let's call her Peggy, has been at the hotel for 14 years. She's seen all there is to see and is well known for her stories. I've listened to some of these stories and honestly, part of me thinks she's full of shit, but the other part is going to cautiously believe her. On the off chance that it might just be true. Here are some things I learned about the hotel in the span of one shift. The man I'm replacing was not actually fired for chronic lateness, as my bot told me, but instead for sexual harassment. The head of housekeeping, a man I get along with very well, is a friend of his. The day before Peggy caught a drug addict rooting around in one of the private back offices, we looked over the security footage and he was definitely searching for something. We now keep the office doors locked. There were two guests several years ago who stayed at the hotel, and the next day they robbed a jewelry store downtown and fled back to the hotel with everything they'd stolen. There was a massive police standoff on the roof, SWAT teams and all. There's a news article about it online, otherwise I would have never believed it. The bedrock of the hotel can be found in the boiler room. There's a slight gap that has been filled in on the top right corner that connects directly to the street. One time, Peggy came down to the boiler room to find a man halfway through the gap head first, trying to get in because he wanted to know what was down there. That image terrifies me. In the span of that one night shift, an alarm went off in the basement. The police showed up at the pub, and a guest verbally abused the day staff over a non-existent shuttle to the hospital. No, not an ambulance, a shuttle. Taking the bus was beneath him, I suppose. And at my bus stop, after my shift, a man was shooting up in public. My city has a huge drug epidemic. My bus took half an hour to arrive, and when I got to my stop, it was as foggy as the Silent Hill movies. I felt as though I should be looking around for Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees. It is October after all. That's one night shift down. I have another tonight, and one more the day after. If anything else happens, I'll keep you folks updated. I mostly just wanted to get this all off my chest. I'm 27 years old, a male. I live in the UK with my fiance, and I'm currently working as a teaching assistant for teenagers with special educational needs in a school not far from Bradgate Park in Leicestershire. I have worked in a number of schools and children's homes now, and these buildings, especially the children's homes, are usually old, renovated houses or halls. This particular story happened in 2013, when I just started working as a support worker at a care home for teenagers and young adults that were 18 to 30 years old with autism, brain damage, and challenging behavior. The house that I worked in was pretty big. There were two living rooms, a large kitchen, a games room, a study, and five bedrooms. There were also a huge garden with a summer house activity room that leads on to acres of fields and woodland. I had been working there for about 3 weeks and primarily worked the walking night shift. This shift ran from 10 p.m. to 8 a.m., and it was my duty to make sure all of the residents were settled for the night, and to get the cleaning done before the day shift came over to take over. I would usually get all of my jobs done at around 1 a.m., and spend the rest of the night listening out for anyone that woke up. I would watch TV, read my university course books, or sometimes just play games on my phone. Once I finished, the residents usually slept all night. On one particular night, a young man named James, not the actual name for legal reasons, was particularly unrestful. He was not very big, but he had a lot of strength behind him when he got into one of his bad moods, and the slightest thing could set him off. He once threw a member of staff through a patio door because she had forgotten to put cold water in his tea before he drank it. He could not form full sentences and would communicate with fairly simple words put together in a way that he understood. For example, he would say something like, "James make breakfast," when he was ready to make breakfast, or "James go outside," if he wanted to go outside and play. He was generally well behaved and could be quite funny when he wanted to be, but was well known for his temper. At around 11 p.m, James got up and came downstairs to make a drink. I stood in the doorway and watched to make sure he didn't break anything or hurt himself, and he went back upstairs without any real bother. I sat on the top step and kept an eye for him. I watched his door for maybe 15 minutes or so to make sure he didn't wake any of the other residents. Once he had settled, I went back to my cleaning. The room beneath James' bedroom was a communal living room with board games, a TV, sofa, and books and stuff like that. I was in there, dusting and mopping the floor when I heard something heavy drop onto the floor in the room above. I knew James was prone to temper tantrums if he got frustrated, so I went upstairs to knock on his door. As I reached for the key to open it myself, he opened the door and looked at me. He seemed perfectly calm, and his eyes looked almost half shut like he had been asleep. I asked if he was okay, and he said yes and put his thumbs up. This is something he did when he was in a good mood and not stressed out. So I left him to it and told him to be careful, thinking that he had knocked something over. An hour or so passed by, and now I was in the kitchen cleaning the sink. I heard another bang above me, again like something had been dropped. This time I realized the room above the kitchen was currently empty. The house was set up to house 5 residents, but there were only currently 4, and the room above was the spare. I immediately went to check it out, but the room was empty. I stood there for a while, and as far as I could tell, everyone was asleep. Due to the nature of their conditions and behaviors, each resident has an alarm fitted to their door that is deactivated and activated periodically through the day and night. At night, it's activated, so if anyone leaves their room, a small receiver box that the night staff carry around will make a noise, and the light will blink for a few seconds to indicate which door had been opened, numbered 1 through 5. The alarm had not gone off, so I knew the noise was not from any of the residents. I got back to my cleaning and didn't hear anything else for the rest of the night. The following night, I got to work just before 10, and as I entered the hallway, I could tell that something was wrong. James was at the bottom of the stairs covering his ears and humming loudly, and 3 members of staff were there with him. After a few minutes, he was escorted to the sitting room, and the house manager gave me a rundown of what had been going on. For at least 4 hours, James had been quite agitated and kept repeating the phrase, "Sarah, the little girl." When asked what was wrong, this was something we had never experienced with him before, and the general conclusion was that he had seen something on TV or in a movie that had stuck in his head and made him repeat this phrase. Once James had settled in bed, the night staff left and the other member of staff was sleeping and went up to the staff bedroom. I got on with my task, and as usual finished around 1 a.m. Soon after this, I went upstairs to do a quick check on all the residents, but as I got to the first floor landing, I noticed the light had been turned off. There were 2 small corridors leading to the bedrooms on the left and right side hands of the staircase. James's room was on the left and the light switch was just on the outside of his room. I turned the corner to flick the switch, and there in the darkness, in complete silence, was James. He was stood in the corner completely naked with his eyes as wide as he could possibly hold them. I'm a big guy, 6'3" and weigh about 220 pounds. But at that moment, I was really creeped out. I spoke calmly to James and asked what was going on, and for a while, he said nothing at all. Then as I turned the light back on, he let out an ear-piercing scream and started slapping himself around the face. The sleep-in staff woke up at this point and helped me calm the situation and get James back into bed before reassuring the other residents that everything was fine. After that night, I had 4 days off. My shift pattern was 7 days on, 2 days off, followed by 8 days on, and 4 days off, and I was relieved that this incident had happened just as my time off began. I got back to work the following week and was told the situation with James, talking about the little girl, had gotten a lot worse. He would spend hours staring out of the window that overlooked the garden saying, "Little girl, where are you, little girl?" And no one would know where he had heard the phrase. That night, around 3 a.m., the alarm went off to say that the door 5, the spare room, had been opened. Now this instantly seemed a bit weird as the door to the spare room was always kept locked because it was being used for storage at the time. I went up to investigate and found James stood in the room in the dark. He didn't seem to notice me entering and was just stood there whispering, "Where are you?" over and over again. I gently touched his shoulder and said something like, "Come on, mate, let's get you back to bed. It's late." James turned around and started heading back to his room, and for a second I was relieved. But then, as I locked the door to the spare room, he screamed out, "Oh no!" and started pummeling the door with both fists. As he did this, the alarm went off to indicate the front door had been open. The only people with a key to the front door were myself, as the night wake staff, and the house manager. The door has 4 locks on it, 2 that require a key, and 2 that require electronic ID cards. It was now 3:25 a.m., and the manager never came in before 8 a.m., so I presumed there must have been some kind of mistake and continued to defuse the situation with James. He finally calmed down and went back into his room, so I went downstairs to check the front door. To my surprise, it was wide open. I shut it immediately and started checking every room in the house in case someone had got in. I then checked on each of the residents to make sure they were all in the house. Everything was fine. The next night, everything was calm until around 2 a.m. when one of the other residents, Connor, got up and said that someone was tapping on his window. I guessed that he must have had been dreaming or something, as his window was on the third floor of the house and was at least 25 feet from the ground. I went back up to his room to reassure him and checked his window. Sure enough, it was shut and the security lock that prevents it from opening wide enough for someone to fit through was still sealed. As he got back into bed, I heard footsteps on the stairs outside of his room. He froze for a second and looked at me with an expression of pure panic on his face. I opened the door to see who it was, but no one was there. He was clearly scared by this and said, "Is he back?" My blood ran cold and I asked, "Is who back? What do you mean?" Connor looked over my shoulder and then sank down into his bed, pulling the duvet up to his mouth. I turned around to see what he was looking at, but there was still no one there. "Tell him to go away," Connor said in a hushed, scared voice. I tried to reassure him that there was no one there and left his bedside lamp on before leaving the room. I went downstairs and sat outside on the patio with a cup of coffee. It was the middle of January and around -2 degrees outside, but I felt like I had to get up and out of the house for a while. After about 40 minutes, I went back inside. I was going to wash my cup in the sink, dry it out, and put it back in the cupboard. Beneath the cupboard was a locked, secure drawer where all the sharp knives are kept until needed. The drawer was open slightly. This was obviously a major issue, as none of the residents were allowed access to the knife drawer without supervision. I counted the knives and realized there was one missing, so I woke up to the sleeping staff, told them the situation, and we began to search. Nearly 2 hours later, we still hadn't found the missing knife, so decided just to keep our guard up and make sure none of the residents were hiding it. 2 hours later, at 5:30 a.m., the alarm sounded. It was the door to the spare room again. I went up to check it out and found that the door was locked. How could the alarm have been activated by the door opening if the door was still locked? I went inside and turned the light on. To this day, I still have no explanation for what I found, and I often think about this incident. The bed had been pushed from its usual place and was against the wall, and the wardrobe doors were open. There were screws and nails all over the floor, but nothing was broken. But the most disturbing part, in the middle of the room, there was a children's doll, a gold bracelet, and the missing knife from the kitchen. The doll was an old-style baby doll. My guess was that it was made in the 1950s from the style of clothes and the overall look of the doll. The bracelet was simple but old-looking. I left everything as it was and reported it to the manager as soon as she arrived. No one ever claimed that the bracelet belonged to them, and it was taken to a charity shop soon after, along with the doll. After the doll and bracelet were removed from the house, James seemed to calm down and never mentioned a little girl or stood around in the dark again. I still don't have an explanation for everything that happened to me, and sometimes think that it was just a combination of strange behavior from a young autistic guy and the fact that the house was old. But on the other hand, a lot of stuff happened that I can't explain logically. My only regret now is that the doll and bracelet are gone and can't be examined or identified. Maybe it was paranormal, who knows, but I work day shifts and do not plan on working night shifts again anytime soon. For 2.5 years, I worked the night shift at a dementia nursing home as a nurse aide in Texas. At night, whenever we were done with our shift change, reports, chores, and first rounds, it would get really quiet. I always felt like I was being watched, and not just by the cameras on the floor. I would walk around to check on my residents to make sure they were okay, and every time I did, it felt like I always had an extra person with me, even when I had a coworker or a nurse with me, but almost every night one of my residents would ask me where the little boy was. I would always ask what little boy they were talking about, and they would always describe the same thing down to the clothes and age. The thing was, all these residents were on separate halls and never interacted with each other. Another time, my mom, who also worked on the same shift, told me when she was doing rounds, and one of the residents who was still of sound mind told her about the little boy visiting him in the room, and was actually sitting in the armchair in his room conversing with him. My mom was shocked because there was no one else in the room and sat in the chair to which the resident said my mom sat on him. Of course, there was no one there. My mom is sensitive to these things and said she would always feel a presence in the building, no matter which hall she worked on. Of course, I don't feel them like she does. Every time the little boy would appear or make himself known, a couple of residents would pass away, two or three at a time, just a couple days apart. After they would pass, Mom would open the windows and pray so they could pass along to the afterlife and not be trapped in the building or their room. Later, we found out from the other coworkers about the little ghost boy who would visit it before they died. Nobody knew who he was or where he came from, other than he has been there since the facility was built. I never was able to find out who he was or where he came from. Some of the nurses and other nurse aides thought he was a precursor to death, an angel, maybe even death himself. I like to think he was a messenger or guide of some sort, letting them know it's almost their time. About a month ago, I started a new job doing security at a local community college. Being the new guy, I was pretty much shafted with the night shift right off the bat. Normally, I work from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. on weekdays, and 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. on the weekends. It's a nice job, good pay, plenty of overtime. The campus doesn't have dorms, and I'm the only one here at night. It gets lonely and very quiet. Watching the security cameras is monotonous, and patrolling the empty dark halls can only be done for so long before boredom really sets in. When I first started, I had the expectation that I'd be given the worst shift, at the worst times. I was right. I was put on the night schedule before I even got to see the place. Really, the place is like this. It used to be an old Catholic academy for girls until the late 60s. It isn't particularly rural, but more suburban. It sits up on a hill overlooking a highway. 5 floors in the new part of the building, 4 floors in the old convent and chapel wings. It was first opened in the 1890s by a religious order of nuns, particularly for young ladies who just wanted to be nuns. It grew out of that until eventually attendance dwindled and it was sold to the state, who in turn converted it to a community college after almost a decade of disrepair. I'm not someone who dabbles in the occult or knows a lot about the supernatural. I mind my own business and try to do my job, but recently, this place has got me in rare form. I don't scare easily now, but just in the short time that I've worked here, I've started to think something's up. The security cameras are typical CCTV cameras, no audio recordings, but in the monitor, I'll hear crackling like static. There's no way to enable or disable audio on the monitor. It comes and goes. I'll hear footsteps, like the leather soles clopping down on the hallways through the security monitor. When I go on patrols in the convent wing, the lockers are typically reserved for the cleaning crew and facility staff. They'll usually be unlocked and wide open. I've seen them open on the cameras, but only my supervisor can play back the footage. Doors that I know I locked during my first patrol will then be unlocked and open on my third patrol. The motion sensors will detect something and turn on when I'm not even on that floor, and when I am, sometimes they won't even react to when I move down the hall. And when I go to what is now the library, which used to be the chapel, I can hear piano music coming from down the hall. So far, I've heard the prelude to Carpenter's Te Deum. I used to take piano lessons as a youngster. I don't really drink anymore, I don't do any drugs, prescribed or not. There is no history of mental illness, and this isn't just a one-night thing. I don't know how to tell my supervisor about it without sounding mad or cowardly. I don't even know if I'm posting this in the right area. Only 4 more hours left in my shift anyways. This happened about 2 years ago, on the day of my 28th birthday. I was working at a small, double-sided, drive-through-only coffee stand about 30 minutes outside of Seattle. I'd been working there for about a year at this point, and was always scheduled to work the closing shift during the week and the opening shift on the weekends. In the 7 years I had worked as a barista, at this point, I had yet to ever experience anything like what I encountered that day, and it is my deepest hope that I am never faced with it again. It was around Thursday, 6:45 p.m. I was preparing to close the stand at 7, like usual, and it was rare that I would have many customers come through the stand past 6:30. Because of this, I was surprised when I looked up from cleaning the espresso machine to see a walk-up customer waiting at the open window, smiling at me. For safety reasons, I normally refrain from serving walk-up customers after dusk, but because the window on the side of the stand he approached was already open, I was kind of forced to acknowledge him. Reluctantly, I decided to serve him. He introduced himself as Ivan. He was around my age, seemed reasonably well kept in the sense his clothing and overall appearance looked pretty clean, and despite a slight accent, his English was pretty good. His eyes, however, utterly unnerving. His gaze made my stomach feel uneasy. Immediately, my intuition was alerting me that something about this individual was very wrong. Every red flag possible was beginning to show in my mind, and I could not shake the deep, almost overwhelming sense of darkness that I felt coming from this person. There was an evil in him that I couldn't ignore, though I would soon find out exactly why I was feeling this way. After greeting him as politely as I could manage, despite my growing hesitations, I began preparing my machine to make him a drink. However, he didn't seem to know what he wanted to order, and I asked him twice what I could get started for him before I silently recognized the fact that he was very likely not here for the coffee. Eventually, he abandoned ordering altogether, and instead directed our interaction toward small talk. He asked me where I was from, how long I'd been working at this stand, etc. I answered each of these questions with short, abrupt answers, hoping my tone and clear lack of engagement would convey the fact that I wasn't interested in continuing any further conversation. Since he was not a paying customer, and because I was about to close. After a long pause, he asked slowly, "So, do you have a boyfriend?" Annoyed, I replied curtly, "No." At this point, I was completely ready to end our interaction, so I told him that I needed to finish closing up so I could go home. Upon hearing this, he walked away from the window he'd been standing at, mentioning in his descent that he is looking forward to seeing me again very soon. A minute or so passes, and he was out of sight, yet my gut told me he was not, however, far away. I could feel his dark energy nearby, and I knew he was watching me from somewhere beyond my line of vision. Cautiously, I closed up the stand, locked the doors and windows, walked to my car and drove home. By the following day, I had all but forgotten the encounter I had with that guy, and went to work as usual. 7 p.m. rolls around once again. I am just about to end my shift and close the stand. I'm nearly finished closing out the register when a brief moment of movement catches my eye from outside the window on the opposite side of the stand. I turn my head toward the area in question, and there, in full view of both me and the security cameras, stood the guy from yesterday. My stomach sank quicker than I knew previously to be possible, and I was immediately aware of how cold it was inside of that stand. He smiled at me with a predatory-like grin, waved, and then proceeded to pull open the closed window in front of him, instead of waiting for me to cross the small distance within the stand that stood between us to open it for him, as I usually would. And although he didn't present himself aggressively, there was something incredibly threatening about his choice to do that. It left me feeling helpless, hopelessly unsafe in that moment, and that was not a feeling I was familiar with, or, as I learned, particularly fond of. Once I was finally able to bring myself back into a present state of mind again, I cleared my throat and told him as firmly as possible that I was off the clock and he wouldn't be able to make anything for him, as my machine was already cleaned and my register closed out for the day. His smile widened further as he replied, "It's okay. I didn't come for the coffee. I came for you." Upon hearing this, I noticed a shift in the energy building between us. The fear I'd previously been overcome with now made a sudden and jolting transition into a redlining level of irritation. "I don't care what you cave for," I told him, as sternly as I could manage. "It's going to have to wait until tomorrow because I am fucking closed." At this, he chuckled a bit before finally raising both his hands in indication of surrender, saying, all right, fair enough." His smile disappeared. His eyes became even more focused on me. His gaze intensified. "Then I'll see you tomorrow," he said in a way that felt less like a statement and more like a threat. I swallowed hard, and once he was out of view, I rushed to the window, slammed it shut, throwing the lock in place. Again, despite not being able to visibly confirm his presence nearby, I knew that he was there, and I could feel his eyes fixated upon me. I left the stand quickly and got into my car to drive home. This time, however, he remained heavily on my mind for the rest of the night, robbing me entirely of any sleep at all. The following morning was a Saturday, so per usual my schedule, I got up insanely early to work the 5 a.m. opening shift. I arrived at the stand at 10 minutes to 5, and for the first few hours of my shift, everything was normal. 8:30 rolls around, and it's now finally no longer freezing and dark outside, as the November mornings here tend to be. The sun had broken through the clouds and was steadily burning them off. As I was admiring the weather out the window of the stand, I noticed a familiar truck pulling up to the stand. As it neared closer, I recognized it as my ex-boyfriend, Jonathan. I found this exceptionally odd, as he and I were not currently on a very friendly terms thanks to his decision to end our relationship by sleeping with someone else, while he was still living with me at the apartment, of course. Once he pulled up to the open window I was now standing at, I asked him skeptically what he was doing here. "I'm sure I'm probably not someone you were wanting to see today, I know, but I just wanted to come by and wish you a happy birthday in person and see how you're doing." Just as I was about to thank him for the birthday wishes and inform him that no, indeed he isn't someone I wanted to see that day, I was still pretty hurt from his cheating, I noticed someone about 100 yards away, approaching the stand on foot. It was Ivan. Suddenly Jonathan's presence there with the stand shifted dramatically from unwanted to very, very appreciated. I whispered quickly to Jonathan that I needed him to stay here with me, even if another customer pulls in for service behind him, until the man who just walked up is gone. I could tell he was able to register the fear in my eyes, and he agreed immediately to stay. I turned to face the open window on the opposite side of the stand just as Ivan approached it. I walked slowly over to him and noticed right away he had been crying. His eyes were bloodshot, and tears were still evident on his cheeks. Disregarding his obvious emotional state, I began to inform him he needed to leave because I was not going to serve him when he cut my words off abruptly. "I don't need this anymore. You can have it." As he said this, he threw what I later came to recognize as his Russian passport into the stand through the open window. I picked it up, puzzled, and asked him why he would no longer need it. "I just won't." "Who the hell throws their passport at somebody?" I thought. I looked over my shoulder at Jonathan, who now had the "what the fuck is going on" look on his face, and shrugged. I turned back to Ivan, only to realize he was no longer standing in the window. I poked my head out the window to see where he had gone, and saw him rounding the corner toward the back end of the stand. I watched him walk around the stand in 3 full loops before he finally stopped, once again at the open window. This is the point where the dynamics of our interaction shifted indefinitely. Ivan stopped crying. His tears were now replaced with a look of complete and utter insanity. "God came to me last night in my dreams," he began. He told me that you will be my wife. He told me you are my wife. A sickening smile crept over his face as my stomach literally dropped to the fucking ground. You are my wife, he stated again. You are my wife and you will come with me now. At this point, he began to lift himself onto the small ledge beneath the window in an attempt to lift himself into the stand. Realizing what he was doing, I quickly slammed the window shut, locking it. He pushed his weight back down off the ledge, paused, and then proceeded to give me a look that made me truly understand the meaning of someone's blood run cold. Before I continue any further, let me just say that until you personally experience a situation that demands you to access your fight or flight response, we have no idea what that response is going to ultimately be. I don't care how tough you feel you are. The type of fear that is required to trigger this defense mechanism in the first place is more than most people ever realize, and how you will react will be involuntary. Until this point, I had always figured myself to be a fight type of person. I'm not, at all, and I came to learn that beyond any doubt on this day. By now, I had dialed 911 and was frantically trying to relay as much information as possible to the operator while attempting to keep one eye on Ivan, who was now at the back door, attempting to figure out the numbered key code to release the electronic lock securing the door. As I spoke to the 911 operator, I could hear the faint beep, 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 beep of the keys being punched on the electronic lock, knowing that there would literally be a one in nearly infinite chance he'd manage to guess a four-number code. I didn't feel too concerned with the thought of him getting entry. That is, until I felt my heart suddenly arrive at a complete stop in my chest as I listened to the fateful sound of the keypad indicating a successful code entry, followed by the loud and heavy thunk of the steel deadbolt retreating quickly back into the door, unlocking it. At this moment, time stopped entirely. I no longer had a sense of it, or if the space around me in which I currently occupied, as I turned in what felt like slow motion to face the door, just in time to see it being pushed open from the outside. I remember screaming involuntarily as I watched a large knife enter through the door first, followed by Ivan's firmly gripped hand around it. Remembering at this point that Jonathan was still in his truck on the other side of the stand, I ran to the window and screamed desperately through the now closed locked and panel of glass, "Jonathan, he's got a fucking knife!" Jonathan's eyes grew huge, and he literally flew out of the driver's side of his truck towards the back door of the stand. I turned facing the back door just in time to see Ivan step into the stand, a mere 10 feet from where I stood. For the rest of my life, I will never, ever forget the look he had in his face as his eyes met mine. It was clear he knew that I was now helplessly aware of the reality of my situation. He looked intoxicated with the power he knew he held over me at this point. I have never felt so much hate come from one person before. Until now, I had hoped this type of evil, as pure as it revealed itself to be before me now, existed only in places far removed from the world I moved within. I had hoped that I would be lucky enough to never encounter it, as I harbored no desire whatsoever to make its acquaintance. Ivan took a total of 2 steps toward me before I saw an arm being thrown violently around his neck from behind. As I stood there in a state of paralysis due to fear, I watched as Jonathan pulled Ivan back by the neck with so much force that his feet flew out from beneath him. Suddenly, both Ivan and Jonathan were on the ground, right outside the door, with Jonathan securing Ivan in a nearly impossible headlock to break away from. He was yelling at him strict instructions to not move, not a single muscle, or he would choke the fucking life out of him. Surprisingly, Ivan remained completely still, never once making any signs of resistance. Jonathan kicked the knife away from his reach and told me to pick it up and secure it until the cops arrive. Upon hearing this, I finally remembered I was still on the phone with 911, who had heard what was happening on my end and dispatched every available unit within a 30-mile radius to my location, marking my call in their response system as the highest priority. It felt like hours before the cops arrived, but once I had a chance to look back on the duration of my call to 911, I realized it had been a mere 4 minutes before 30 local city, county, and state patrol units overtook the area. To this day, I have never seen so many cops respond to a single call before. At least 6 cops descending on Ivan at once, relieving the grip Jonathan had been holding around his neck and forcibly, more than necessary to my silent pleasure, detaining Ivan and carrying him, practically hogtied, into a waiting cruiser. Apparently, while speaking to the cops after being securely restrained and unable to flee, Ivan insisted continually that I was his wife. God had told him, after all, that I was intended for him. I belonged to him, God said. He was simply there that morning to collect, which had been promised.
Let me guess. Your medicine cabinet is crammed with stuff that doesn't actually work. You still aren't sleeping well. You're still sore. You're still stressed the heck out. That's how it was for me. So I cleared out my cabinet and reset my health with CBD from CB Distillery. It's been a real change. CB Distillery's targeted formulations are made for the highest quality clean ingredients. No fluff, no fillers, just pure, effective CBD solutions designed to help support your health. In 2 non-clinical surveys, 81% of customers experienced more calm. 80% said CBD helped with their pain after physical activity, and an impressive 90% said they slept better with CBD. If you struggle with a health concern and haven't found relief, make the change like I did, to CB Distillery. And with over 2 million customers and a solid 100% money-back guarantee, CB Distillery is the source to trust. And as it so happens, I have a 20% discount to help you get started and save a little bit of money while doing it. Visit cbdistillery.com and use code SWAMPED for 20% off. That's right, cbdistillery.com, code SWAMPED, cbdistillery.com.
I've been working the night shift for as long as I can remember. I do security for older, abandoned places. Usually it's nothing too crazy. Sometimes I'll have to run off a homeless person or two, but that's generally about it. That was until the summer of 2014. I live in Texas. We don't generally put up with anyone's antics. There's a reason they tell you don't mess with Texas. Anyway, I say this to tell you, I take that sort of thing to heart in many ways. It is a part of my own personality. I don't scare easily, and I sure as hell don't back down. Things in my story start off rather subtly. The odd sound here and a weird movement there. It was nothing crazy at first, and considering I had been on my job for a good 5 years at this point, I thought maybe someone was messing with me or it was just rodents or something like that. It was probably about mid-July when things began to really escalate. I was walking around this old office building. The places I watch over were fairly large, and so I didn't often get bored, as while I would take things at my own pace, the places were large enough that truly searching them meant the whole night was over before I knew it. So, as I said, I was waltzing my way through the building, scanning around with my flashlight and half zoning out when I heard a noise in a room across the hall. The noise was a grinding noise, like when you drag those chairs across the floor in a classroom. You probably know the ones. You have those weird feet, and they make a grating and aggravating noise. Well, I entered the room the sound came from, and as I did, I noticed the sound is extremely easy to hear at this point. I announced myself thinking someone was being stupid or maybe just wanting to be caught or something. Still, the noise continues, and at this point, it's constant back and forth like someone is running the feet of the chair. Anyway, I was annoyed and wanting the noise to stop, so I rushed around the corner of some cubicles and yelled, "Whoever is back there needs to leave." As I round the corner, however, the noise stops, and the chair is just sitting there, abandoned. Thinking someone went around the other side, as that was the only way out, I went over there. I try to cut them off and get to the door. As I'm rounding the corner, I hear a loud slam. I turn around and realize the chair had been thrown at me, and just missed my head. Pissed off at this point and a bit confused, I searched the room high and low. I found no one, nowhere. I checked every nook and every cranny, and no one left back out the door. I don't know what that was. I know this because the door is rather heavy and old, so it creaks and makes a fair amount of noise. While this was strange, I simply wrote up a report and went on about my night. I didn't have much of an explanation. It certainly was odd, but
I've always been a super rational individual, and I'm not one to overthink these things. I wasn't sure how to get out of the room, but in my head, the only thought was someone had to have obviously found a way out. I hadn't considered anything paranormal. The rest of the night went by fairly uneventfully, and I went home soon after. A couple of weeks later, near the beginning of August, I was working some overtime, a rare occurrence, when I heard distinct and heavy footsteps down the hallway. I followed these footsteps to the end of the hallway when suddenly they were behind me and on the other end of the hallway. A tad thrown by this, I decided to follow the footsteps back when it happened again. At this point, I believed maybe a couple of homeless people or even some kids were messing around with me, and thought it would be funny to make loud noises down on each end of the hall. Again, I'm a rational individual, so if it could be explained in some rational way in my head, it was as good as solved. I walk toward the end of the hallway and laugh and call out. I tell the people messing with me that I'll let them off if they just get out of here, as they were doing was actually amusing me and livened up my night a bit. There's silence for a moment, and I'm about to walk off when I hear this ungodly yelling. It sounds inhuman, and is so loud I feel myself jump out of my skin for a moment before I bring myself down to reality. This is when I hear a sudden barrage of steps coming my way loudly and quickly. I turn and rush down the hallway, and once again, the ungodly call yells at me again. This time, I swear I hear my name in the sound. Deciding I might be freaking out over nothing, I pause for a brief rest and try to rationally decipher in my mind what had just happened. The noise had faded and it appears I'm safe at the moment, so after a good 10 to 15 minutes of talking myself down, I laugh at myself and decide it is time to go back and check things out. I head back down the hallway slowly and scan things. The air has a heaviness to it, and I feel myself getting a headache as I push further down the hall. There's an almost humming sound going through my head now, and I believe I'm beginning to see something. I see the light shifting in the halls, and that's confusing, and there hasn't been any power to these buildings for a while. Then, it's dark again, and I swear I can hear my name again. It's being whispered, and while definitely shaken by everything, I shout angrily that whoever is messing with me needs to leave now. See, I might be afraid, but there is a limit at which point I go from being scared to pissed off. If someone was somehow pulling a prank, something I was beginning to believe less and less as things happened, I was fed up with it, and they needed to leave. Then, all at once, the air grew lighter again, and the humming and whisper simply just stopped. I filed a report. I'll admit, I was pretty non-specific as to what I witnessed, as I didn't know for sure myself what was happening, and I didn't want to put my job in jeopardy by sounding like a loon. The remainder of the night was quiet, and I didn't have any problems again until a couple of months later in early October. It was around the first or second of the month when I came into work in a fairly great mood. I'd met someone over the past couple of months and she was a wonderful woman. We're married now. Excited to go see her after my shift, I was pretty light on my feet and chipper in my mood as I walked the halls of the buildings. That is when I heard the all-too-familiar noise. It was an inhuman screaming, almost a growling sound. Confused and annoyed at this point, I headed through the building I was in as swiftly as possible. Nothing was going to ruin my mood tonight, I thought to myself. As I'm searching, I hear the sound again, but this time it resonates through the hallway toward me. Whatever was doing this was loud enough I could hear it through the entire building. Deciding I should seriously look into this, I head a bit more quickly, peeking around corners and searching places I don't normally check. I'm not finding anything when I hear a very distinct screaming. It sounds like a woman. I head toward the sound of that screaming, and that's when I find a trail of blood. I call the cops immediately as I head inside. I'm trying to explain everything I hear to them, but that's when I find a woman, or what's left of her, ripped into and bleeding all over the place. I'm in shock as I'm explaining to the 911 dispatcher where I'm at and what I am seeing. That's when I hear the growl again, and I can feel my body being overtaken by goosebumps. I've never in my entire life felt chills like this. There's a scratching sound coming from down the hall, and I'm asking this poor woman who clearly can't say anything, what the hell is going on? She is just coughing up blood and bleeding all over the place. As I continue to hear this thing come down the hall, I am freaking out, and that's when I see the flashing lights from outside. I scream with all my lungs, "Help, help, we're in here!" Soon after that, the air grew less heavy again and the paramedics and cops arrived. I'm crying, holding this poor woman who looks like she'd been mauled by a bear or something. I'm confused and don't really know how to explain that. I don't know how to explain what I had heard or how this woman was even here, bleeding to death in my arms. I'm taken out, the woman is taken too, and I try my best to explain what I knew. The woman died from the wound she had and loss of blood. I don't know how to explain this thing that is down there, but I was moved after some time off to a single building to watch, in a much more populated area. I'm fairly certain the police seemed to think the woman was mauled by a rabid dog or something. That was the word anyway. I, however, do not believe for a second that this poor woman died at the hands of an animal. At least, not some rabid dog. There was something in that place, and I was never more sure of this fact until that night. I still work nights now, and thankfully, things are more peaceful. I've never gone back to those buildings, and I don't ever plan to. This is the one time in my life I can say I don't wish to know what was hiding in those buildings, and I don't wish to know the explanation behind what happened. Whatever it was, I don't believe it was natural or human. Thanks for reading my story. You can call me Maddie, as I won't share my real name. I was a 911 dispatch worker on a night shift for my area. I won't share my area as I don't feel comfortable doing so. That said, anyone working 911 dispatch on any shift can tell you it's a tough job. It's very mentally and emotionally taxing, as it's your responsibility to make sure someone gets the help they need as soon as possible. But some of the things you hear on the other end of the line, well, they're just horrific. We go through a fair amount of training to deal with these things, and there is always an open door if we need more help dealing with things mentally or emotionally with the trials of the job at hand. Anyway, my story revolves around several strange calls I got over the course of several nights, and the strange occurrences that happened soon after. The first night I got one of these calls was in December. It was during most kids' holiday. One of the first things we ask people to give us when we receive a call is the address that they are at. It's a vitally important bit of information, as unless you are calling from a landline, we don't usually know the specific address you are calling from. This is changing as tech changes, but at the time I was doing this, if you were calling from a cell phone, we could trace within the general area in most cases, but we often couldn't get an exact address. Also, depending on how many cell towers were in the area, if you're in a rural area and you just have poor signal, it can make our job that much harder. Anyway, I get a call and it's a man who simply says, "Help," in a groggy sounding voice, and the line just dies after that. As I said before, if it's a landline, we'd have an address immediately, but this is what makes the call stranger. I have no information appearing at all as to the location of this call. There's generally some form of information, but I can't get anything off of this. Thrown off by this, I inform my supervisor of what just happened. We talk for quite a bit, and she tells me she will look into it if I get another call like this, and just to let her know if it happens again. I'm sure she was worried. Maybe there was something wrong with the system or my equipment. I continue through the night, and everything is working smoothly, it seems. At this point, that one strange call has been pushed to the back of my mind and was almost forgotten. At about 6 in the morning, I'm ready to head home. That's when I get the last call of my night. It's that same groggy voice, and it simply says, "Help," before hanging up. Once again, there's no caller information or anything to work with. I talk to my supervisor, who tells me to get home and get some rest, and she'll look into the issue more thoroughly. I go home and crash immediately. The next night, I'm back at it again. I asked my supervisor if she ever figured out what was going on with those calls. She explained that she hadn't, but once again, if I got another one, just signal her and she'd come and check it out. I believe she figured it was a prank of some kind, but she wasn't allowed to voice it out loud as we were supposed to take every call seriously, and she seemed to be regardless of what she might have been thinking. It's about 11 at night, and when I get another call, and judging from the lack of data on my computer, I know immediately it's the guy. I signal for my supervisor, who quickly rushes over and answers the call herself. This time, there is nothing on the other end. No voice. Just breathing. The line then hangs up. Still, there is no information at all. Weirded out, my supervisor has me work on a different computer and system just to see if that changes anything, or if somehow our own equipment is glitching. It's 2 in the morning, and when we got another call from this man. Once again, there's no information. My supervisor tries to inform whoever is on the other end that if this is a prank call, they will be charged. There is silence, and the line hangs up again. My supervisor is equal parts confused and also angry, and I'm just at a loss. That said, the remainder of the year goes by without any more calls. It's shortly after New Year's when we get the mysterious call again. I answer and signal for my supervisor. The voice on the other end sounds like some groggy man, the same one from before, and he simply says, "Why didn't you help me?" This time, the caller ID turns up, and the call, it was coming from inside our own building. I remember the shock on my supervisor's face, and I remember being completely confused. My supervisor informs me she is going to search the building and ask that I keep doing my job. I agree to do so, but inside I just have this bad feeling. Nothing is right about these calls. I reluctantly get back to work and try not to overthink the calls I got. It's about 4 in the morning when I receive another call. It, once again, is coming from the building. It's the man, but he sounds happier. The words he says next put chills down my spine. "She's mine now." The line hangs up. It is around this time I notice my supervisor hasn't responded to my signaling and haven't seen her since she was going to search the building. Trying to be rational and assuming she's probably talking with police or trying to get things handled elsewhere in the building, I try to continue my job till my shift ends. The second I'm off shift, I see the daytime supervisor and I ask him if he's seen or heard from the night shift supervisor. He said no and I began to get this sinking feeling. I ask him to search the building for her, as the last that I'd heard from her, she was looking into a strange call as we were getting from the building itself. He said sure thing, and I made him swear he'd search the building. I then went home and tried to get some sleep. It was shortly after I got home that I got a call from the daytime supervisor. He informed me that he'd found the night shift supervisor hanging in the basement level of the building. It appeared to be a suicide. I remember being freaked out and trying to explain that there was no way it was a suicide. There was no way. I remember being questioned about everything that had happened, and I remember the only answer I was ever given after it was all said and done was that my supervisor's death was a suicide. It was ruled a suicide and everything pointed to a suicide. I still don't believe it was a suicide, and for a few months after this took place, I'd get calls at varying times of the night at my personal cell, when off duty with that man's voice. He'd just laugh, every time, and that laugh is etched into my memory eternally. I quit my job and moved a few months later. I no longer work in any sort of high-stress job. In fact, I work from home now. I haven't received another call since moving. I'm a nighttime security guy who watches over a business. I won't identify the business or my employers, as to do so would result in the loss of my job. Anyway, I'll keep this as brief as possible. My job really isn't that hard. I basically stare at cameras and if anything seems off, I check the area. It's really that simple, but the nature of where I work makes it very important. So, I've been at this place for 15 years now. And around my 5th year is when things got really odd. I'm not sure what changed, to be honest. There's no dark history behind the land or the buildings I work in or anything that should make it obvious things would happen. Still, I was working on a Saturday night roughly 10 years ago when the first of the activity started. It wasn't much, I was working in office, examining different areas when I saw a door open. It kind of just cracked open like someone had turned the latch and lightly pushed the door ajar. I watched closely as the door shut again, and I saw no one. Fearing a security breach of some sort, I made note of the room and number and floor, and headed to check it out. When I arrived, I found the door hovering open. I say hovering open as the door will close if you don't hold it open. It's made to do so, and also to lock behind you as it shuts. I called out, asking if anyone was there, and stated my name and job to them. I received no response, and so I took my flashlight and headed inside the door. Turning the lights on, I didn't see anything out of the ordinary. The door shut normally behind me, and it didn't seem like anything was propping the door open or that anything in the room had even been touched. After thoroughly searching the room and then testing the door several times, I went back to my security room at a loss for what had happened. I wrote a report and noted it. I didn't find anyone or anything that would have caused the strange happenings. A week goes by and it's another Saturday night. It's probably about 1 a.m. when I notice someone running through the hallways. I follow them in the cameras until I notice they are headed my way. Right about the time they hit the camera outside my room, there is a power surge, quickly followed by a pounding on the door. The surge ended, and no one is on any of my cameras. I look outside immediately and search up and down the hallways. I found no one around, though. At about 3 a.m, I head back into my security room. I begin writing up another report and somewhat worried my supervisor is going to think I'm some sort of nut with the reports I'm writing. The remainder of the night is fairly relaxed. I file my report and go home for much needed sleep. About 3 months later, possibly, I'm chilling and doing my job when I hear giggling from outside my door. Okay, I think. Strange, but nothing life-threatening. So I check my cameras. Once again, there doesn't appear to be anyone around, but I can very clearly hear distinct giggling, and I could still hear it as if it's right there. Deciding I'd be better just to check and open the door and look around, I can still hear the giggling, but now it's further down the hall. I walk forward and check the corners before proceeding onward. Every time I seem to turn a corner, the giggling is magically on the other end of the hallway. This is weird, but again, I don't feel threatened and I need some entertainment, so I decide to keep following the giggling. I spend the next hour following the sound in circles and all over different floors. Eventually, it stops. I find myself once again standing in front of the security room. I head inside and check the footage, but it just shows me walking around and looking as though I'm doing my rounds. As such, I decide not to waste my time with the report as nothing weird was caught on camera. These are just a few experiences I've had while on the job. There are plenty of other strange happenings, and they still happen today. I'm not sure what is wandering our facility, but I'm not sure it can be naturally explained, and I do not believe that it is in any way threatening. I've actually grown to somewhat fond of our games of cat and mouse. It makes my shift a lot more exciting, and I think it's kind of fun to investigate the odd sounds and weird happenings around the place at night. Who knows? Maybe one night, I'll finally see something that explains everything happening. But if I never do, I'll be happy knowing I've made an unseen friend, and we've had many fun night hanging out in a way. My name is Ricky, and I'm a carny. It's a life of travel, and a life I've always loved. Still, nights have another aura about them. Depending on the location, things can get weird, and while my life is generally weird, there are some places I always dread going. My story takes place in the Midwest, a truly scary place indeed. It was fair time, and we would often spend a week here and go and spend another week there. These sorts of things are huge events, and I'm grateful to be able to bring joy to the kids and families who enjoy the rides we build and break down so often. All that aside, this place was something else. It wasn't subtle about it either. The very first night of the fair, and I'm working the Ferris wheel, when I hear this loud screaming. I see some of our crew rush over and check on the screaming. It isn't long before we all understand why the screaming happened. There's a dead kid in the House of Mirrors, heart ripped from their body in big old bloody footprints that seem to lead to the mirrors, then simply vanish. Needless to say, the fair was shut down quickly the remainder of the night, and the police were very intentionally questioning all of us who worked the fair. Not a great opening night to the fair, to say the least. Well, we answer their questions and explain how we are just perplexed as they are. The smug nature of the local police doesn't help the situation either. They are convinced one of our own murdered the kid, and we have every moment now to fess up. After much arguing and no way to prove any of us had anything to do with the murder of this poor child, we are basically blamed for everything by the police in the town. Needless to say, we weren't extremely busy that week. In fact, all the business we got seemed to be from edgy teens who thought going to the murder fair would be exciting. I was messed up, but business is business, and we took what we could get, and all things considered, it was pretty much okay. It was the final night of the quote-unquote murder fair, as we were now dubbed, when some of the teens went into the Hall of Mirrors. There was laughter and shouting which drew our attention at first. I had someone take over my Ferris wheel work, not that anyone was on the thing at the time anyway, and I went into the Hall of Mirrors just to be sure that everything was fine. I just knew they weren't going to be fine. A few seconds after entering, I hear this screaming, and that's when I see the teens come stampeding out. I ask them if they're alright, and they're shaking and saying no. I ask them what happened, and they tell me they saw this female clown inside one of the mirrors. She just stared at them, smiling. The kids were very descriptive about this, and mentioned how her teeth were sharp and covered in blood. I smiled and asked them who came up with the joke. The looks on their faces said it wasn't a joke. I told them I'd go in and check it out, and to stay out of the Hall of Mirrors in the future. I looked high and low and didn't find anything at first. It was about the time I decided to head back that I was confronted with the most grotesque and freaky-looking clown I've ever seen in my entire life. I know how crazy it sounds, and all I could say is I literally peed myself and thought I was going to die. There was this 6 or 7 foot female clown with a big grin on her face, and a large, what looked like, knife or something in her hand. She just kept laughing at me before turning and walking off. I was thoroughly confused, and as I attempted to follow her, she turned the corner. The problem being, the corner led to a mirror. I looked in the mirror and saw no one. Freaked out, I marked the mirror before leaving the halls completely. I remember marking a big X on the thing and heading out to talk to the other carnies. Everyone asked if I was okay, and I just told them no, and that in the morning we needed to take the mirror I marked out and destroy the thing, and replace the mirror in the next town. I wasn't asked much about it after that, and the first thing we did that morning was destroy the mirror. The next town we hit went smoothly, though word had gotten around about the murder fair, and we did have fewer children present. Our final stop in the Midwest was where things came to a head, so to speak. The business was booming and things were going well. We were having record sales and attendance as people have moved past the whole murder fair being scary and moved into a fascination with the idea. Rumors about the kid who never made it out, and while it was no doubt really messed up, it was the citizens who did this, not us. We didn't market our fair as such. To be honest, we had hoped people would just forget about it. That wasn't going to happen now, though, and it was less likely to happen after this night I'm about to speak of. A kid went into the Hall of Mirrors alone. It wasn't long before his mom flipped out, understandably so, and began screaming at us that her son went in, but he hadn't come out in 15 minutes. It got to the point to where she was harassing other customers. In an attempt to calm the woman, I offered to go with her to look for her son. I explained the only ways out were watch closely, and I'd walk with her and we'd finally probably find her lost son. This wound up being a mistake. Her son wasn't lost, the kid was clearly missing, and how that was so much a mystery as the fact that several people had been in and out of the place and didn't notice a thing. Kids don't just vanish. The cops were called and again we were questioned. We were all but run out of town after that. A few years after this all happened and once things settled down a bit, We went ahead and attempted to run a carnival around the area again. We avoided certain towns, but we were welcomed in the ones we went to. We completely abandoned having a House of Mirrors, and we never had a problem after that. I don't know what happened to make that House of Mirrors how it was. Perhaps we were cursed. I'm honestly not sure, but we sold that section of our fair to a private purchaser who thought its history was odd and curious. I sometimes wonder what they use it for if that clown still roams its halls.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
I'm a private eye, and as such, I work a lot of late-night shifts. People sin the most at night, I always say. It's easier to catch most off-guard than to, in my opinion. Now, my work typically takes me all over, but much of my work involves catching cheaters in the act. The kind of thing is generally easy to do and kind of boring. So, to put it frankly, I was more than a little excited when I was asked to look for someone's missing daughter. I was told to be discreet, and I was paid up front. I didn't even have to ask, and that's something I generally have to fight with people. Usually, I ask for half immediately to pay the bills and half when the jobs are done. So I guess my alarm bell should have gone off when the client paid all of it up front, no questions asked. Still, I'll admit, I was so relieved by how prompt and upfront they were about the cause that I wasn't about to argue, and I made their case my priority. I was told that the client believed their daughter may have run away. Still, the city is a dangerous place to be running free for anyone, let alone a kid. The girl was supposedly 15, and I figured I'd start my search asking around the city through my contacts if they'd seen the girl. I got a big fat no from most of my contacts. But then I got a message about a girl that had been seen matching this girl's description 30 miles outside of the city. This had me concerned, and after doing some digging, I was eventually led to a farm. Now, I went here after receiving a tip about the girl. Looking back now, though, I wish I hadn't gone there at all. When I first inspected the place, it was by daylight. There were all the usual, unexpected private property signs, and after thinking on it, I decided I was going to approach the owners of the farm. Part of me didn't want to, but I was a smooth enough talker. I mainly wanted to get a vibe of the place anyway. I could have done this on my own, under cover of darkness, but I wanted to make the owners feel comfortable, and no matter the story they gave me, I was going to check the place out anyway later on. I figured, if nothing else, I'd get an idea of the lay of the land. So cautiously I announced myself, and that's when a tall man approached me. He looked to be 6'4", and of stout build. The man spoke to me in a deep voice and basically asked what the hell I was doing near the farm. I explained I was looking for someone, and I was wondering if they'd seen her around. After showing a photo of the girl, I got a very firm, no. I asked if anyone else lived on the farm, and perhaps I could show them the photo. After a very tense silence, the man opened the gate and insisted I come in. I cautiously walked ahead of this guy, being certain I was going to be murdered and never heard from again. As I walked through, I examined the area. It was pretty open, but there was something that caught my attention. It looked like a barn off in the distance. I diverted my attention straight ahead once more to see an old house. We'd walked some distance when two women come out. One was a heavier set one, and the other was quite the opposite. I have nothing against anyone who's overweight, as I have a bit of a belly myself. But the stark contrast was just something I noticed. A shorter man came out and greeted me and asked what it was I needed. I explained to the man I'd been looking for a young girl that had recently been near the area, and I was wondering if they had seen her. The man took a close look at the photo and said he hadn't, that he was off and busy working the farm, at which point he'd handed the photo to his wife. She shook her head before turning to their daughter and asked if she had seen the girl. She looked closely and shook her head, saying she hadn't, but she'd keep an eye out in case anything was happening around the farm. I then took the photo and told the family thank you, and said I'd be on my way. I even gave them a card to call in the event they saw her. I soon left the farm, escorted by my giant friend on the way out. I quickly drove away after that, but not too far, as I basically took a nap in my car and waited for the night to fall. It wasn't long before my alarm went off and I realized it was 9 at night. I slowly drove my car toward the farm and drove by it as I looked for a decent area to ditch my car. When I found one, I parked my car, shut it off, and ran back to the farm. The vibe of the place was so much different at night. I was sure that this was part of my imagination and the creepy look of the place at night was just me being nervous. Still, I pressed forward, hopping the fence as I did, and slowly working my way toward the house. There were no lights on and all appeared silent when I approached. I peeked inside the windows and realized there was no activity, and so I looked around the area. Finding nothing in the yard, I examined a nearby shed. At first, all seemed well. But as I dug further, I noticed some photos. The photos were in a bag titled Family. Looking through them, they seemed innocent enough. That said, something didn't sit entirely right with me. The photos were all of women who looked to be in their teens, smiles on their faces, and wearing a strange gown made out of burlap sack. On top of that, the smiles they wore didn't seem entirely genuine. It looked more than a little forced. Examining these photos just showing the girls hanging out and doing farm work and eating watermelon, I attempted to make a call out to the contact after taking a photo of the photos. I was hoping to see if any of these girls were missing. Naturally, I had no signal out there though, and so I left the shed quietly and headed down the lane toward the fence and back to my car. Once there, I sent a text to one of my friends and asked about these girls. The person said they'd do some digging and get back to me, so I waited for a bit and eventually was told none of them had been missing. Confused, I told them thank you and decided I'd get something to eat and get some sleep as daylight was fast approaching and I wouldn't be able to get anything done then. The day came and went, and I was awoken by my alarm at about 7. There was still light out, but I wanted to get some food in me and get ready for a second night out, searching the premises. At 10, I headed back onto the farm. Once I had finished eating, and it was about 9, I had headed back to my hiding spot and waited. At 10, I headed back onto the farm. I was quiet, and I once again checked the house and made sure there was no activity. After I realized everything was quiet, I decided I wanted to check the barn in the distance. The area was open, and I couldn't help but feel afraid that someone would see me as I approached the barn itself. That was the least of my worries, though, as I would soon realize upon approaching the barn was lit up. There were chains all over the doors, and as I peeked through the slit in the doors, I could see another door, partially covered by hay with a padlock and something else on it. Listening more closely now, I could hear screams. Screams for help. I immediately inspected the outside of the barn and kept a close eye on things as I heard movement inside the barn. Listening more closely from the back of the barn, I could hear chanting. I didn't understand the language, but I knew someone was in there. Knowing I wouldn't have signal and decided it's best to report things to police from here, I made my way back across the field. But midway across the field, I heard a gunshot and felt a great deal of pain in my right arm. I couldn't help but cry out in pain as it was so sudden and immense. I looked closely at my arm and kept my head quite low this time as I did so. I heard another shot fire off and I felt a bullet whiz through my hair and nearly miss my skull. I then heard an all too familiar loud voice shouting expletives and telling me I'm trespassing on private property. Out of options and unsure what to do, I called out stating who I was and informing them that if I wasn't out here in the next few minutes, the police would be raiding the place. This was a desperate lie, and the reality sank in all too quickly that I might not make it out of this place alive when the voice came back laughing and telling me they enjoyed the taste of bacon. It was at this moment I knew I was out of options and was screwed, if I didn't start moving, and fast. I got up and ran, keeping no straight lines or particular patterns. I kept thinking I'd likely be dead any second, but as I made it to the fence and threw myself over, there wasn't another shot fired at all. Perhaps he bought my bluff, perhaps not, but I didn't wait around to find out as I was desperately hobbled to the hiding spot my car was in before driving as best as I could to the nearest gas station and calling 911. I explained the situation and who I was, and they mentioned that they would have authorities out there immediately. I told them I'd come out once I saw the lights, and in the meantime, I'd be in a spot near the farm. I told the authorities that they should be careful. I told them that they're very dangerous. I told them to bring guns, as these people didn't seem like they cared at all whether the cops showed or not. It wasn't long before I was back at my spot and the police were already on the scene. I was checked out by a paramedic and questioned. I told them I was fine, but I wanted to be sure the girl I was looking for wasn't there. The police spent the remainder of the night searching the farm, only to find it abandoned. The family wasn't there, and upon breaking the padlock on the barn door, what they found inside were crazy. They found a bunch of photos, but no bodies. The entire area was searched thoroughly, and the clothes of the girl I was searching for were found in the house, but there was no sign of the girl outside of this or the family. It looked like the family had been keeping many girls underneath the farm, but no one ever found them. Some skeletons were found on the property later on, but I never found the girl. I returned the payment I received from the family to them, but they told me to keep it anyway as a thanks for at least finding where she was. To my knowledge, this family hasn't seen or heard from her since.